Hello and welcome to Mac Power Users, episode 738. My name is Stephen Hackett, and I have the pleasure of being joined by my friend and yours, Mr. David Sparks.
Hey, Stephen, what just happened there?
New intro, new music.
Yes.
It's very exciting.
We got stuff to talk about.
We do. We do.
If you're looking at your podcast player, you might see something different too. But before we get there, let's talk about More Power Users.
Yes.
Today on More Power Users, that's the ad-free extended version of the show, we're going to be talking about leveling up our 3D printing. Stephen and I have been doing that. It's not like there's any news this week. It's not like Apple, you know, got sued by the DOJ or something. But we've decided we are stepping aside from that. We're going to be talking about 3D printers and More Power Users. How's that?
We've become designers now.
Yes, we have. We're bringing it to a whole new level.
That's right.
I can't wait to talk about that. But MPU, we are at the we are approaching episode 750. And about 2 or 3 months ago, we started texting each other about, hey, what do you think about changing things up a bit as we approach 750? And I was very receptive to the idea, as you were. And, you know, once in a while, you just got to change things up a bit, right?
Yeah, that's right. So we've done several things here. You've already heard the first one, new music, and sort of a new, more modern, I guess, version of the introduction. But we've also updated the show art. And I have a link in the show notes of the evolution of the Mac Power Users artwork. And going way back, it's always been a battery. It's always been green. But you and I both really like orange. And so we wanted to sort of lean into a new color palette, although the green is still there for More Power User members. So we still have that legacy there. But more modern look, easier to manage, a little bit cleaner. I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, just to give a little history on all of it, the music was just me going through in the early days. I mean, look, we didn't think the show was going to last past 10 episodes. So I didn't really spend a lot of time, but I went through the GarageBand royalty-free clips, and that's mm-hmm. how I found the one we use. In fact, there are other podcasts and other things out in the world using that music. Occasionally, somebody will write me and say, hey, somebody ripped off your music. I'm like, no, we're all using the same royalty-free thing from GarageBand, you know, 20 years ago. And like, I'll see it on a YouTube video or something once in a while. So that always kind of bugged me. And we had kind of toyed with the idea of changing it. We actually tried to change it a few times, and it never really worked. And then we started talking about the music, and that kind of led to this whole conversation. In fact, let's just do the music first, and we'll go to the artwork. The idea of it was to make something that kind of sounded like a Mac startup sound, but cooler. And that's what we did, really. I think Jim Metzendorf killed it.
Yeah, it's based on like an old Quadra startup sound from a long time ago. But we wanted to sort of bring some of the Mac into it, right? And I think the boys in Upgrade have done a good job of that. Upgrade also opens with sort of a Mac-like tone. And it's got our own take on it. And yeah, so Jim has been great to work with. There's new ad bumpers, like the whole soundscape of the show, music-wise, is new. And yeah, huge props to Jim. He's been editing the show for a couple years now, does an excellent job. And when we were talking about the music, we both wanted Jim to have his hand on it, and we're super pleased with it.
Yeah, and it's Mac-inspired throughout. So that's it. It's shorter and kind of to the point. We're going to stop doing that thing where we enthusiastically shout out the number of the episode before the music starts. We're going to just hit the music. It's a short chord, and then we're going to get into the show. So that kind of gets things moving a little faster too. And then, like you said, is the logo. I love this collection you have here of the old artwork. And again, it's a thing where you can see over the years, it kind of evolved over time. And now for the first time, the battery is vertical. And we have the orange version and the green version. And I do like that we didn't change the subtitle of the show.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was right on. And we do talk about orange enough that now we can do stuff with the orange color, right?
That's right. We got the orange color. So the social accounts and stuff will all be updated, and also have an update coming to the forums to rebrand them in those matching colors. But, you know, if you're more power users, you still get the history of the green. That green is still an important part of the show, too, so we wanted to keep that there. But we also have some exciting news because we also have some new merchandise, a couple of shirts and a couple of hats to commemorate the change. These are only available for a few weeks, and there are some links in the show notes, but they're really awesome looking.
Yeah, I'm going to be stocking up, as you do. And the hats are really cool. I really like that we're going to have hats. But the logo, really, we started very basic. And over the years, as we switched a couple networks, the artwork changed. But this new one is by far my favorite. And I feel like, yeah, I want to get some stickers made. I need to do some work. But this is really cool. And thank you to everybody that helped us with this. We had a lot of help from the network and Steven. And congratulations, Mac Power users, as we're heading towards episode 750. We're getting a bit of a new look.
Yep, super exciting. We basically just couldn't wait until 750. Like, the artwork came back from JD, the designer that we use at Relay. It's like, we got to do this now. This is too awesome to sit on.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Got impatient, but that's cool.
And as members will know on the Spotlight, which is a members-only podcast that Mike Corelli and I do for all Relay members, Relay itself is going through a rebrand that'll be coming out later this year. And so I already have versions of this artwork with our new logo on it, and it looks really good. I'm excited about that too. You see the old logo and it's like you instantly want the new, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, it's also just an evolution. You know, Mac Power Users has been around a long time.
Yeah.
And, things evolve. When we started Mac Power Users, Apple really was a Mac company, and now there's so much more. So here we go, baby.
Here we go. This episode of MPU is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for building your website, a store, blog, portfolio, whatever you need. Squarespace is ready for you because it's the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Maybe you're just starting out, or maybe you're managing a growing brand. Either way, you can stand out with a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything, products, services, and even content, because Squarespace has everything you need all in one place. Their Blueprint AI and SEO tools make it easy to get started. You can build a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. Choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. And then easily launch your website and get discovered quickly with integrated, optimized SEO tools so you show up more often to more people and grow the way you want. You can also integrate flexible payments into your store to make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. Accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Kickstart or update written content on any website with the built-in AI tools in Squarespace, generating instant personalized results that know and show your brand identity. Explain what your site is about, choose your tone, and enter what you need to get either short or long-form text. No matter the placement, Squarespace AI makes it easier to go live, stand out, and succeed online. I have built websites on top of Squarespace forever, and I keep going back to it for projects because all these tools make it really easy to focus on the content, the messages that I'm trying to get across on a website, whether it's for an app or maybe a nonprofit or another organization I'm working with. Squarespace is just the place I go, and it's the place you should go to. Go to squarespace.com/MPU for a free trial, and you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/MPU for 10% off your first purchase. Our thanks to Squarespace for the support of the show and Relay FM.
Okay, so this show was my idea, And it's something that's always been a curiosity to me. And I know that there's a lot of our listeners that are into Mac collecting, and it comes up once in a while, kind of on the periphery of the show, that Steven has got all these Macs. If you ever do a Zoom call with him, you can just see all of them stacked behind him. And I wanted to get deep on this today. I want to find out what your collection is, how it came about. I want to talk about what you do with it and why. And for people interested, you know, what the rules of the road are. I know you've kind of learned a lot about Mac collecting over the years. I thought it'd be fun to share some of that with the audience. So let's just start to address the size of Steven's collection. Did this come together because of the show, or were you already working on this? Steven has a shared Google document here that is just bananas with all the Macs you have.
Yeah, so I've been slowly working on an inventory. And when we scheduled this episode about a month ago, I was like, okay, now I have to finish it. So it was a good, It was a good push. I clocked 6.5 hours in Timery putting this together.
Yeah, I believe it.
It's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of stuff. So go check out the Google Sheet. There's a link in the show notes. You can sort by manufacturer or the category or the year, whatever you want to do, condition even. And I do have sort of an update that will come to this a little bit later on with links to things that I've written or filmed about various things. That's just not done yet. So that will come, and I'll probably put a blog post up whenever that's finished.
I mean, first of all, there are a total of 251 entries.
Yeah.
With the last one being a 2024 vintage Vision Pro. So I like that. But you'll go all the way back to 1976 and the Altair 8800. And so,
yeah.
I mean, you've got a really nice collection. And it's not just desktop or computers. It's displays and accessories. And I honestly, Steven, I didn't realize how big your collection was.
I didn't either.
I started looking through this.
I didn't either. It was very kind of eye-opening to do this. So a couple of caveats. One, I've been super fortunate because of what I get to do for a living that a lot of the stuff has been sent to me by readers and listeners over the years. In fact, just like on Friday, I got an email from somebody wanting to know if I wanted to adopt some stuff, you know, they were cleaning out. And I love those emails. Sometimes I say yes, sometimes I say no, just kind of depending on what it is. As you can see from the list, I have a lot of stuff. And so I try not to have duplicates very often. So you look at this, don't think that I've spent a fortune on my collection. I've spent some money on my collection. Like my 20th anniversary Mac, I bought for myself when I turned 30, just about 8 years ago. That was my 30th birthday present to myself. I spent quite a bit of money on that. But a lot of this stuff has come from listeners or readers. And I'll talk a little bit later on about how you can get started. You don't have to have a podcast company to start a collection. Like, it's not a straight line from here to there. But it is, I was shocked that it was 250 lines of stuff. I really was. And, you know, I started going through the office and I have stuff in both rooms of the office. I have some stuff in my attic. There was more in the attic than I remembered. Although my wife was like, yeah, you have a lot of stuff up there. So the other evening I was like in my attic with my laptop, like taking notes on this stuff. But it is fun to have it all in one place.
That's one of my questions for you. Does Mary know of the existence of this spreadsheet?
I showed her, cause I told her, I was like, I'm working on inventory because we're going to do like a collection episode on Mac Power Users. And when I was done, I said, do you want to see it? And she thought about it for a minute and then said, yes. And then as I handed her my laptop, I said, remember, a lot of people give me things. so I'm not sure that helped. But she did say, well, at least it's not in the house. Because in our old house, before I had my studio, this stuff was just in the in the closets, like in the kids' rooms and stuff.
Everywhere. So. Every closet.
Yes. Yeah. So it's better than it was.
Yeah. My wife and I have that negotiation sometimes. Usually she's got something she's done and like she'll say, do you want to see how much this cost or whatever? And my usual answer is no. I feel like it's easier to just be ignorant. So, you know, good on Mary, you know, going in there. But the but you've got some great Macs here. You've got, you know, it really is a diverse collection that really runs the gamut. And I love the way it runs kind of the gamut of the Apple story. It's not just, like I said, the Altair was, you know, you got to kind of have one of those because that's the starting point, right?
Yeah.
But the but you also have several Next computers and mm-hmm. hardware because that was part of the story. You know, Steve left and made Next, and then Next came back in. So I think that it was wise of you to kind of like collect along the whole line,
yeah.
the through line of Apple.
Yeah, I'm glad you called those two things out. The Altair actually popped up locally, and a friend of mine called me and said, hey, I know someone who has an Altair they're trying to get rid of. Go read about the Altair 8800. Like, it's basically the computer that is like why Microsoft is around. They built DOS for it and then took off. The Next stuff, most of my Next stuff came from a single donation from a listener who actually went to college with some friends of mine, and now this listener has become a friend. And he had a lot of Next stuff from his college days and was like cleaning it out and was coming through Memphis. And so like came to Memphis with like a car full of stuff. In fact, I unboxed a lot of that on a stream like years and years ago on my YouTube channel. And a lot of the Next stuff came from there. And it is cool, right? Because it is all part of the story. And I don't have any real like hard lines of what I will or won't like bring into the collection. Like you can see like I have no real PCs in here, but like if I came across like a nice original IBM PC, I would probably add it because it's like of historical significance and is an interesting computer because it set off all these things. But it is by far an Apple collection. And for a long time, it was very focused on the Jobs 2.0 era. So, 1998, 99 through sort of the iPhone. But over time, and especially in more recent years, I've been a bit more specific about wanting to go further back in time. So, like the Apple III, like I had one-to-one for a long time, and I bought that. It's the logic board for the Apple III is in one of the Apple history calendars. I forget which one. And so sometimes machines come in for a certain project like that. But now I've got a pretty good range, like you said, like the Apple II. I got some weird Apple II stuff all the way through, you know, modern things.
A couple things that stand out for me is, you know, I'm a little bit older than you. So I actually remember when almost all of these computers were new. The Altair was, I was interested in computers, but I wasn't aware of the Altair. But literally starting with Apple II, I was all in. And the And so it's kind of fun to me looking through this, just kind of remembering where I was in time. One that stood out to me as a weird entry is you've got a Dell mini 9-inch computer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why is he got a Dell in there?
I guess I do have a PC. The Dell mini 9, you can Hackintosh very easily and run Leopard on it. And
yeah.
Back in the day, I actually did that and like ran a Leopard Dell mini 9 for a while in college. And I have a Dell Mini 9 now because I want to recreate that for like a video or something. And so I found one super cheap on eBay a couple years ago. So that, yeah, there is one Dell in there for kind of a future project.
Yeah. And for folks that don't recall this, back in the day, the Dell Mini 9 Hackintosh was a very popular computer. I remember I was speaking at the American Bar Association, and there were so many lawyers there, Mac enthusiast lawyers that had made the Dell Mini 9 like their carry around Mac, you know. And it was before the iPad. I think it's before the iPad was announced. It was right around that time. And everybody's like, oh, Apple's missing out. They're not making a mini Mac.
A netbook.
A netbook. Yes, that was the term. And yeah, so I get it. But that's cool that you've got that in there. Another thing, just to kind of, I guess this is the best time I can think of to talk about my history with this stuff, is there was a period of time when I was in high school, which was the mid 80s, where I desperately wanted an Apple computer, but my parents wouldn't get me one, you know, but they were very expensive. And I got like a deal on an Atari ST computer, which we talked about last week with David Metzger. And it was, for people that were enthusiastic about music, it had MIDI ports in it. And I hacked the living daylights out of that thing. I mm-hmm. literally bought another, because it had like 512 RAM, and I bought another 512 of chips off the out of the back of a magazine.
Nice.
And the way you doubled it is you soldered it on top of the existing chips. So like you would have like a two-story chip, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And you had to solder each contact point. And my friends and I, we spent a whole weekend doing it and we turned it on and I'm like, this is either going to like catch on fire or this is going to work, and it worked. But yeah, so it was just like, it was a wild time back then.
Yeah. It's kind of the Wild West, and you know, hardware, as you go through this list, if you sort it chronologically, the hardware kind of becomes better, but also less interesting over time because you can't do those sorts of things. Like you really hit a line in the spreadsheet of, oh, this is a computer that you can't open on your own anymore and tinker with.
Yeah. Well, it's quite a list. A couple of other questions I have looking at the list. At what point did you say, okay, now I'm collecting them? Like, obviously, this didn't start out as a collection, right?
It didn't. The first thing I really sort of collected, you know, was like the G4 Cube was a gift from somebody. And about that time, I picked up my first clamshell iBook G3. And they were within a year of each other, probably. And, you know, I just had them like on a bookcase in our, you know, first little apartment Barry and I had together after we got married. And it was one of those things like, yeah, this is like interesting. The Cube I wasn't using. Like the Cube was just for looks. The clamshell was like, okay, like I have a spare laptop. And like, this was probably 2007 or 8. And so a G3 wasn't super irrelevant yet. Like you could still like get on the internet and like do stuff on a G3 in 2008. And so that was sort of like a backup machine. But it really wasn't until probably 2011 or 12 when I started picking up, I think my first sort of run of purchases or pickups were like some towers. So I had a blue and white G3 tower that actually came from my first job. And then a friend of mine had it and then I got it back. And I still have that computer, that exact model now that I had at that high school job. And I was like, oh, I should get like a G4 and a G5. And, you know, that was, like I said, 2011, 2010, 2011, 2012. And from there, it really sort of started taking off with finding stuff locally or, you know, the occasional, you know, sending of something from a listener. And then it really kind of got serious, I think, when I had the studio space, when I could put things on a shelf that was like lit and looked nice and wasn't in a kid's closet. And so, you know, that would have been now 7 or 8 years ago. And it's definitely slowed down now because like I'm out of space basically. And I have 250 things, like I have plenty of stuff. And so my wish list has gotten smaller and smaller, for sure.
How much time a week do you spend like on eBay or whatever sites you go to see what's available? I didn't write this one down. I wanted to hit you with it.
Very little. I used to just do a lot more perusing. But now it's really like I want something for a project, for like a video or a blog post. Or if something comes to me, like that email I got on Friday, someone had some things like, but I'm not doing just like wandering around shopping anymore the way that I used to.
But you have pretty good knowledge at this point, I would guess, as to what values are and availability of different Macs.
Definitely. And I want to talk more about that in a little while because some of that stuff is really out of whack out there in the market. You know, I can look at something and be like, okay, that's reasonable, or, you know, no, that's totally bananas.
Do you ever do any work on any of them?
Not as much as you would think. Like, I think I would do more if I were like a retro gamer, right? Like I've played Oregon Trail on my Apple II, like, because you have to, right? It's like legally obligated to do it. But if I'm working, like I want all the modern stuff, right? Like, you know, I want my browser and my DevonThink database and, you know, my text editor. But there is something to be said, you know, on occasion I will pull something out, usually one of the clamshells because I have a soft spot for those, and or a titanium PowerBook that I put an SSD in. So it's like the fastest G4 machine ever. And those machines are fun for writing. And I used a lot of the collection for the screenshot library that's on 512 pixels. And I did a similar project for Rogue Amoeba last year or 2 years ago now. where they wanted a screenshot history of all their products. And so they definitely come in handy when it comes to those sorts of things.
Yeah, the somewhat related. When my kids were little, we always had the computer, the family iMac downstairs. We had like a common area, and I never wanted them to be able to have a computer in their room. And back then, there really wasn't a lot of bad stuff, but it's much worse now. But then at some point, one of them said, well, I think it'd be fun to, you know, write my reports upstairs, you know. And so I got this great idea. A listener sent me an old Mac SE that still worked. I bought off Amazon a floppy drive to plug into it and a floppy drive to plug into my Mac. And I set her up with MacWord or MacWrite. And I said, go ahead and write your stuff. And it was a non-internet computer in her room.
Yeah.
And she used it for like 6 months, and she would write stuff on it. And then we'd come down, we'd take the text file and drop it into like Pages or whatever, and she'd submit it to her. But, you know, so I did actually have a useful period for one of these classic Macs back in the day. I don't think I would do it that way these days. I'm sure there's an easier way if you wanted to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe get them a Hemingway or something. But the I do think that it is kind of fun that you can use. I'd love to hear it in the notes if anybody is out there like really using one of these old classic Macs. I'm sure in our audience there's at least a few people that are.
Definitely. And there's definitely room for it. You know, if you have legacy software that you rely on or have a bunch of content, and like maybe you did a bunch of writing in like AppleWorks, like I did in high school, and you want access to that stuff, like, yeah, you can spin up an emulator or something, which we can talk about in a little while, but it is also kind of fun to have that on original hardware.
Yeah. You need the startup sound, you need the good keyboard, you gotta like go all in.
Yeah.
Well, for me, it's very, it's very sentimental seeing this stuff, but I'm not into collecting. I don't keep stuff, but yeah, I get it.
No, I get that. It's a weird hobby, you know. I got friends who come over and like they want to see the studio, and I have to like tell them like, okay, you need to understand something. Like, I'm going to open this door. There'll be a lot of computers in here, and you just need to know that before you come in.
But it's not that weird, right? I think there's a lot of people who collect old Macs.
There's weirder things, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think. I hope.
This episode of the Mac Power Users is brought to you by Sanebox. Tame your email today with Sanebox. Go to sanebox.com/MPU today for a $25 credit and a 14-day free trial. Let's all admit it. Email is out of control. It takes way too much of our time, and a lot of it isn't worth our time. Wouldn't it be great if you had a little person inside your computer, like a little robot that went through your email for you every day, every night, all the time, checked your email, and then sorted it for you? So then when you go into your email, you only see the important stuff and all the garbage is shifted aside. Well, that's what Sanebox does. It's one of my favorite implementations of AI currently available. Sanebox identifies important email and automatically organizes it to help you stay focused on the important stuff and lets you ignore the rest. If you know how to use email folders, then you already know how to use Sanebox. Then it sends you a daily update about what was sorted and other email activity, so you never miss anything important. I go into my inbox and I see just the things that are important to me. Sanebox is critical to me to manage email properly. I've been a customer for years, and I'm so happy to have them as a sponsor of the Mac Power Users because I really believe in this product. There's a bunch of additional features, like you can have it keep track of replies. If I send an email to Steven and he doesn't reply in a few days, Sanebox can send me a reminder. There's a bunch more. You can check it out over at sanebox.com/MPU to get that $25 credit and that free 2-week trial. Mac Power Users listeners convert to Sanebox customers in ridiculously high numbers, and that's because you guys see the value proposition. It just sorts your email. It doesn't matter which email service you use or app you use. The Sanebox works with all of them. Go check it out today at sanebox.com/MPU to get that $25 credit and let them know you heard about it here on the Mac Power Users.
A very common question is, why would you choose this as a hobby? And I got a couple reasons. The biggest one for me is I'm a hardware person. Like when I review things, when I consider things, I think about the hardware first. That was a big thing I wrestled with in my Vision Pro review several months ago. It was like, this thing is hardware and software, and you got to talk about both. But what's cool about having a big collection like this is you can see the march of time and the ebb and flow of ideas like playing out in plastic and metal and, you know, aluminum and glass or whatever it may be. To go back to the example a little bit earlier of like the Power Mac line, like the blue and white G3, and then there were three generations of Power Mac G4 and then the G5. Apple had some like real strong ideas in the blue and white G3.
Yeah.
Like, what if there was a door and you opened the door and you could see all your computer insides? Like, that's a really good idea. And they refined it for years through the G4. And then the G5 sort of took that idea, but then they had to balance it with the G5 creates a lot of heat and we got to cool it. And the G4 case wasn't capable of that. And so you can see all these trade-offs and all these decisions. And I just find that super, super interesting. Like, I'm so interested in how things are built, how they're put together, how they come apart. And there's always this tension, and not always, very often there's tension in Apple hardware specifically of what they want to do and then what the technology lets them do. And so sometimes you have weird things like the first MacBook Air from 2008, which is an incredible piece of hardware, but a pretty bad computer because the processing and the storage stuff, it just wasn't fast enough for a machine that thin. And then a few years later, the good MacBook Air came out, right? And now, like, you and I and everyone else believes like the MacBook Air is like the best Mac you can buy for almost everybody. And so seeing that in hardware, being able to put your hands on it, and then of course for me, because I've turned it into a job, like being able to talk about it and photograph it and stuff is just is a bonus. But I love hardware. And you know, I've got some stuff in my collection that I knew coming in didn't work because I wanted the hardware. An example of that is the Power Macintosh G3 all-in-one, like the Molar Mac.
Yeah.
And I knew it didn't work. They're super hard to come by. I found one with like a pretty reasonable price tag. And I wanted it because it's like the precursor to the iMac. It was this weird education-only machine. But it's also nostalgic for me. My high school newspaper, I've talked about this before, is where I first used the Mac, like where so much of my career like goes back to that high school newspaper. The machine that I was assigned, because I was doing like ad design, like graphic design for the ads in the paper, was the Molar Mac. And so I sat in front of a Power Macintosh G3 all-in-one for like a year in high school, making little ads for a high school newspaper. And I wanted one, and they're super hard to come by. One came up. I knew it didn't work, but I was like, that's okay. Like, I have the thing. And maybe one day I can get the parts and fix it, maybe not. But sometimes just having the thing is enough.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing about the hardware is because Apple makes such crazy good hardware. Like, look at the Vision Pro and just everything that's packed in there and how it all works. It's just shockingly, you know, how did they get to a point where they can make this? Well, the fact is they made a lot of mistakes along the way and they learned a lot. And like, I remember watching a documentary once where Apple made a Mac where they put really great speakers in it, but whenever you turned up the volume, the magnets in the speakers would erase the hard drive.
Like, perfect.
That happened once, you know, and it's like they didn't figure it out until after it shipped, and that was a problem. If you played the Mac too loud, you lost your data. Can you imagine that today happening? You know,
not be good.
So it's just things. You know, it is. You know, so there's this institutional knowledge that's been building up. And also there's just different phases of Apple, right? There's the Steve Apple, there's the non-Steve Apple, and different priorities being given to hardware. And seeing that over the ages, I think really would be interesting for someone like anybody that listens to this show, how it's evolved.
Yeah, I think so. And I think like it's one thing to talk about it when you can take pictures of it, you can see it. It's something special. But there's also, of course, the software side. And there's this weird relationship between old hardware and software that outside of things like emulation, which again, we're going to come to, outside of that, software dies when the last hardware that can run it dies, right? Yeah. So eventually, everything that can run System 7 won't boot up anymore for whatever reason. And then System 7 is gone, effectively, right? Software is held prisoner, if you will, to the hardware it can run on. And there's something about preserving this hardware. And look, even though I'm not repairing all of this, like I have huge visions, right? Like everything running in my collection, it's probably a fool's errand. But even just keeping it out of the landfill is in a way helping preserve the software. And there's lots of things out there helping that. It's not just people like me collecting Apple hardware or people who collect, you know, this is actually another big sort of parallel universe is the Commodore community. People yeah. collecting the PET and the VIC-20 and the Commodore 64 and the 128 and the later machines. That community has done an excellent job of keeping that hardware alive, keeping that software alive. And in the Commodore community, people are still like writing new games for the Commodore 64 in like the year of our Lord 2024. Like wild yeah. community. They're so passionate. I really like a lot of the things about the Commodore community, even though it's not my world. But yeah. they also understand the importance of preserving hardware to keep the software alive. Now, with Apple, that's harder than with other companies because Apple's hardware, at least the old hardware, was very dependent on things like ROMs and other things that are really hard to come by. Like, you can basically build a Commodore 64 today with off-the-shelf parts and, you know, probably a little bit of IP theft in the ROMs, but it's out there.
Yeah.
It's yeah. much more difficult to build a Mac Plus from scratch. I think you could probably figure it out, but you may need old stock on some things because the way Apple built these machines from the very beginning, more closed, more customized components. And so it's up to old hardware to kind of keep this stuff going.
Yeah, and a lot of those old Macs, you know, like they had batteries on the motherboard that if, you know, you put it in a closet for 10 or 20 years, that's going to leak and ruin the motherboard. You know, there's yeah. just like a lot of like little time bombs on those old Macs.
So oh, yeah.
there are very few of them that are still running. That was one of the interesting things about your database is you have a field for that, of ones that you've got working, ones that are, you know, are still under repair. And I know that's going to be. I see like someday like old gray-haired Steven like just doing nothing but like restoring old Macs.
Maybe. Yeah. I'll be a much better solderer than I am now.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the software front, there's a couple of projects that I want to highlight. The first one is I think one of my favorite things that's happened in a long time in this community. And it's a project called Blue SCSI. And so this is an open source project. You can go out and build your own, or you can buy like the one I bought from somebody. And it's a board that you plug into a SCSI port on an old Mac. And it means you can run the Mac from an SD card and not from the old aging hard drive that's probably dead.
Yeah.
This is something that other communities had. You could do this on old DOS machines, the Commodore machines, and Amigas and stuff for a long time. It's newer to the old Mac community, but it is pretty sweet. And so I've got one of these things. And in fact, the cover of the second Apple History calendar, it's a picture of a classic, I forget which model it is, but it's a compact Mac and it's running MacWrite. That machine is booted from a Blue SCSI. And it means you can get software on and off and files on and off really easily because networking this old stuff, if it's even possible, it can be a real nightmare.
So is Blue SCSI, is that an option to like replace the innards, or it's just a way to get an operating system onto a working machine?
Yeah. So it will replace the internal hard drive on a machine that it's compatible with.
Okay.
And but so,
but not like the processor and everything. That's
no. Storage. It's just storage, just a storage solution. Because that is the most common failure, right? Is a hard drive from the 90s dying, right? That's you have capacitors and other stuff too you have to deal with, but this takes care of the storage. It's also super fast. Like booting a compact Mac from an SD card way faster than an old hard drive and about a billion times faster than booting from a floppy disk.
Like unrecognizably fast.
It's weird. It's like, is this already done? Like it doesn't make any sense. But it is super cool.
Yeah. And how much do these cost if somebody's listening, thinking about like using it on an old Mac?
Yes. So it depends. You know, there's a couple people who sell them in the US, and you know, prices range anywhere from like $15 to $50, kind of depending on how you spec it. And they've got different versions for different machines, desktops, portables, you know, various different things. So you have a bunch of options, but it's pretty affordable. And if you kind of know what you're doing with hardware, you could totally build one on your own if you needed to.
Nice.
Or if you wanted to, I should say, because this is about want. Yeah. You know, this is about I want to solve a problem.
Yeah.
Need. What a funny word. the second resource I want to point people to is the Macintosh Garden. Some people kind of raise a red flag at this website of like, you're hosting a bunch of old software. Like they have, you can read about, they have rules about what you can upload to this. But the idea is there's a bunch of abandonware out there, like software written in the 80s and 90s that's not supported anymore. The company or the developer may not be around anymore, but you want it to live on. And so they have like thousands of software titles on here. So if you have an old Mac and say you have a blue SCSI set up, you can put a bunch of this software on the SD card and then boot the Mac from it. And you can run that software on the Mac. And it has kept third-party software alive in a way that just wouldn't happen otherwise. And other communities have this, right? It's not unique to the Macintosh community. Lots of communities have repositories like this. But it means that if I want to go find a game that I played in elementary school, or I want to go run a really old version of pCalc by our friend James, it's on here. And I can download it and I can run it. And there's some software in here. Like I spent some time in preparation of this just scrolling through here because I haven't done it in a little while. There's some stuff on here I never heard of. Because I didn't grow up in the era in the 80s and 90s. Like I came to the Mac basically in like the year 2000, kind of in the OS X, the very beginning parts of the OS X transition. And so I didn't spend a lot of time running System 7 or little bit of Mac OS 8 and a lot of Mac OS 9. But some of the stuff I didn't get to experience firsthand. And so it's fun to go back and explore.
Yeah. And I'm just looking through here, seeing some old friends, but there's also fairly recent stuff. There's iWork 2006. I mean, I had that CD. I remember that one, you know, so some of this stuff is fairly recent, but yeah, that's kind of cool. And it's such an interesting question, right? Do you keep the software alive, even though it's probably subject to somebody's copyright, but they're not using it anymore? I mean, it's like, it would seem to me like the developers would probably want the stuff, the people who wrote it would want it to still exist, because software does disappear. It can go extinct if we lose it. Yeah.
Yeah. I would imagine that's the case. I'm sure there are examples of people who have, you know, gone to sites like this and be like, hey, please take down my stuff. But at the same time, I think it's overall like more good than bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. So you, between Blue SCSI and Macintosh Garden, you can get your old Mac running any of the old software that you want, basically.
Oh yeah. Like. Yeah. And they even have like old versions of Mac OS, and there's, you know, I picked this one cause it's sort of the centralized source, but there's tons of stuff out there if you start looking around.
But then there's also emulation, and that I think is more possible now than ever.
In some ways. So there's kind of two things here. You have emulation in the sense of I'm running a virtual old Mac on my current Mac. And it's not really an issue of, is the new hardware fast enough? Like the new hardware runs circles around the old stuff in ways that doesn't even make sense. Like the numbers don't even are hard to comprehend. And there's a bunch of different ways of doing that. Some of that has become more difficult in the Apple Silicon transition because some of these tools have not been updated. And all these tools run like different things. Like some can only run, you know, Mac OS 8 and 9. Some getting early versions of Mac OS 10 running in emulation are very difficult. Steve Trout Smith underwent a project a few years ago, tried to get some of that going. It's very difficult to run like Panther in a VM. It's easier than it used to be, but harder than it should be, in my opinion. So you can go down that road, but that's where a project called Infinite Mac comes in. Infinite Mac is this incredible project that uses the web browser to emulate everything from system 1.0 that came with the Mac 128, system 6, 7, a couple of versions of NextStep and OpenStep, all the way through Mac OS 9. And you can run them in your browser. And it uses like a bunch of cool modern browser tech, so you can save files to your virtual machines, and it's actually saving your browser cache, and so it's there next time you go in. Wild. This project is unbelievable. You probably saw it. I think they started with System 6 or 7, and it was going around to like System 7 in your browser, but Infinite Mac has really expanded over the years to include a lot of stuff. And if you've never used these old OSs, or it's been a long time, this is by far the easiest way to play with them. You don't got to go out and buy a Mac Plus, you know, to try System 6. You can check it out in the browser. And I think it's an incredible service to the community and an incredible service to the legacy of these operating systems and the people who worked on them, that you can just spin them up in a Safari tab. It's wild.
Yeah. And it's so fun. So we're putting a link in the show notes, and like I've been aware of this site and had it bookmarked for a while, and I do go in there occasionally. It's just fun going into an old Mac operating system that I used to work in, and just like, even the behaviors are the same. Like, it used to be on the Mac, you had to hold the mouse down when you were in the menu bar. Like, eventually that went away. But like, it's just the old behaviors, and I don't know, maybe this is an old guy thing, but I really love this website, infinitemac.org.
It's incredible. It, like I said, it's such a service. And that's really how I think about these things. So many people at Apple and in third-party companies, they did the best work of their lives on this software and hardware, right? It's kind of a cheesy line Apple likes to use, but it's true. Like, it's really true. And keeping it alive is a way to honor that work. And that's all wrapped up in the nostalgia of it and like the interest in it, but it's a part of it too. And that's what I feel when I look at that Infinite Mac project.
Do you have a favorite classic Mac operating system?
I mean, gosh, I used 9 the most. And so like personally, I have a soft spot for like 9.1 or something. But yeah. I think the late versions of System 7 are really interesting because they're making the transition to PowerPC. They're adding color to the UI. And it's before you get to Mac OS 8, which had like a bunch of weird ideas in it. Like, some of them didn't stick or go very well. So System 7 is kind of the last version that's like the original Mac. Mac OS 8 and 9 are kind of different. And then obviously 10 is a whole different beast.
Yeah. And System 7 for me overlapped law school. And I used so much during law school. I love the System 7 emulator, and also it's a nice big screen too, so you can really play in it. But this really brings me back going through that one.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. This episode of Mac Power Users is brought to you by AdBlock Pro. AdBlock Pro gives you a smoother Safari experience. You know those infuriating autoplay videos, deceptive X buttons to close an ad, relentless scrolling banners and sketchy redirects? Well, you can wave them all goodbye and welcome a decluttered and more delightful browsing experience. Are you constantly bombarded with those annoying allow cookie pop-ups? Well, you can effortlessly dismiss those with AdBlock Pro. You can mute comment sections on popular websites or selectively block page elements with a single tap or click. And unlike some other services, AdBlock Pro is coming to Vision Pro natively, which is really cool. Not only that, AdBlock Pro has earned itself a spotlight by Apple on the App Store not once, but twice, 3 times in the Safari extensions category. That is really cool. So make Safari snappier with the Adblock Pro and dive into a web realm that's 2 to 3 times faster, slashes your data usage up to 60%, and extends your battery life. You can experience basic ad blocking absolutely free. Or for the cost of 2 coffees annually, you can unearth premium features that will transform your browsing journey across your iPhone, iPad, and Mac. And with family sharing, one subscription covers up to 6 accounts. Lifetime options are available as well. So take action. Jump into the App Store, search Adblock Pro, and transform your Safari experience today. That's Adblock Pro in the App Store. Our thanks to Adblock Pro for supporting the show.
All right, Stephen, for people listening that are interested in getting started, share some wisdom with us. How do you get started collecting old Apple hardware? You know, where do you go? What do you do? How do you avoid getting kind of cheated?
Have a plan, I think, is the biggest thing of, you know, have an idea of what you want. Like, and it's easy. Most people are like, yeah, I want a G4 Cube. Like, hey, that's awesome. A lot of the people want that. So the price is going to be high. It's supply and demand is very real in the collection world. But whatever it is, have a plan on what you are interested in. So for me, like that Molar Mac, I wanted one. It was important to me in my personal history. So I had it on my list. In addition to the plan, though, have a budget. It's really easy, and I'm guilty of it, of you get in a bidding war with some goofus on eBay, and you spend way more than you meant to. And then you have to like go tell your significant other how much you spent on buying a Power Mac. Avoid those conversations by having a budget.
Not that you've ever done that.
But not that I've ever done that. That's for my work. You know, start up a whole business so you can. No, that's bad advice. Having a plan, I think, is the most important thing. Like you can, and I've done it. Right, you're just perusing eBay late at night, and something strikes you. But if you're getting started, I think having a nostalgia play is like important. You know, an old Mac that's important to you, maybe your parents had, or something you used in school, or the Mac at your first job, whatever it may be. I think it's a great way to start. And then I think a little bit of research into whatever you're looking at. Like, are there common pitfalls of like, so for instance, the blue and white G3, there's a couple of revisions of that machine. Revision A had issues with the IDE controller, where it would basically barf on certain hard drives. And so if you want one of those and you want to, that's actually a great machine for a collector, because the blue and white can run, this off the top of my head, so don't quote me, some version of Mac OS 8 all the way through Mac OS 10 Tiger. It's like the single Mac that has the longest range of OSs. I think it's up there. And so the blue and white is a great first collector, like if you want to use software on it. But maybe look for a revision B, because the revision A has those issues. Say you want an iMac G5. A bunch of those, basically all of them, all the early ones, had failed capacitors. Industry-wide there was capacitor plague sort of in the 2003, 4, 5 time range. And it killed a bunch of iMac G5s. And so if you're looking for one, this type of capacitor is the type that blows. This is the type that doesn't. What does that look like when one fails, when one blows? Well, it's going to be swollen on top, or it's going to be leaking capacitor juice. You should know what that looks like. So when you're looking at something on eBay or in person or whatever, you have some information. You don't have to, you know, read everything about it, but some cursory looking around the internet can be helpful. Search 512 pixels. I've written about a lot of this stuff over the years. Look at forums, the vintage Apple subreddit. While there are some people in there who are opinionated about things that I don't quite agree with, it's a pretty good resource as well. Just kind of have some basic information so you don't fall into a common mistake with whatever model you're looking at.
Yeah, I was going to ask what resources you go to, but you just listed them. So 512 pixels, the subreddit, any forums that you particularly recommend for this?
Yeah, I think that subreddit's really good. There are some other forums, like depending on the era you're looking at. So like the Motorola, like the old Motorola machines, there's some specific forums, like just for people on those systems. If you're looking for a cube, I don't even know if it's forum is still around, but it used to be like a G4 cube owners forum. Like those things are still out there. They're harder and harder to come by. A lot of those communities have sort of withered, but I think the vintage Apple subreddit's good. And I think general searching is also good because there are people like me and plenty of others who write about this stuff. And so you can find articles out there about, okay, well, this is the system. These are the common things I need to know about it. There are materials out there. And then there's always stuff like low-end Mac and every Mac that have tech specs. Low-end Mac has a lot of articles about, these models have these issues, but these upsides. Low-end Mac is not as active as it once was, which makes me sad, but it's a great resource, and they've got years and years of history there to comb through.
Okay. You mentioned earlier that eBay is a place that you've bought them on. Any particular tips for eBay? Any good alternatives to eBay?
Yeah. So eBay is the de facto marketplace, but prices on eBay can be truly catastrophically high. For instance, I'm in the market for a nice 20-inch iMac G4. The one I have is either a 15 or a 17-inch. I don't remember. It's probably in that spreadsheet. But I'm looking for a 20 for a very specific project I want to do. And so I've been looking, and that's the big size of the G4, and people want like $1,400 for a working one, which is bonkers. Do not pay four figures for an iMac G4. Do not do it. Like, that is criminally high. And when you're looking at eBay, that's the only thing you're looking at, you may think that's normal. And look, some stuff is that expensive. You're going to spend four figures on a 20th anniversary Mac. Like, my 30th birthday present, I spent $1,200 on. Yeah. And you only turn 30 once, is what I told myself. And I only got that machine so cheap because it was out of a smoker's house, and I knew that I could clean it and like defunkify it. But
yeah,
eBay can be very high. And so saved searches are your friend on eBay. So when a new listing comes up, you can email. I've got several of those for different things. But just know that very often eBay is going to be the highest thing. And so that's where places like Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist or Nextdoor, whatever you have in your area, wherever you live, that can be a much more reasonable resource. A lot of cities have like upcycling websites, or even, we don't have one in Memphis, I wish we did, but bigger cities will have upcycling centers. Like, people can take old tech and they resell it, or they recycle it properly. And maybe they'll have sales to the public on certain days of the week, or things like that. There's a place like this in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that I desperately want to go to because I've seen videos of people going through it. It's like a warehouse full of stuff. But those sorts of resources can be much more affordable. But just keep in mind that you're dealing with people in person, you know, and all the safety stuff and sort of common sense that goes into that. But I have found some real gems on Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist over the years. And that's one of those things, like, if I'm looking for something specific, like right now I'm in the market for a 20-inch iMac G4. It's on my list for later this week or sometime next week to actually start searching locally for that, because the eBay prices just don't make any sense.
Yeah. The one note you put in the outline I just want to underline is always have a top price in mind. I think that's, don't let passion overtake you here.
Don't do it. Because you will spend more than you anticipated. And that's no fun.
One thing, Steven, I'm looking at your collection and I didn't realize it till just now. There's no Lisa here. How did you miss that one?
Oh, it's on my wish list. The Lisa may be the top of my wish list. They're super rare. There were a couple different models of the Lisa. I wrote about it on Mac Stories a few years ago. I'll throw that in the show notes, but very influential computer, very few of them. Some of them got turned into like this weird Macintosh XL thing, and a bunch got mowed under in a landfill in Utah. And so there's not a lot of them. The ones that are out there, even fewer of them actually work. So nice examples, especially like the earlier ones that are more desirable, serious, serious money, out of my league right now in terms of a collection piece. I would love to have one day. And maybe one day one will fall on my lap. I felt that way about the Macintosh Portable. Also pretty expensive. It can be hard to come by. And then I got an email from somebody one day who was like, I've got one in the case. It's basically brand new. Do you want it? I was like, yes, sir. I would very much like to have that.
Yeah.
And so sometimes things fall on my lap. But again, you know, I do this for a living. It's not the norm. But it is, it can be fun.
I wrote up at Max Barkey a few months ago. I watched the David Grealish documentary. David is a very enthusiastic Lisa guy. And he went through and like went to the location where they did the landfill. Like what happened was Apple had stopped making it and they wanted to write it off the taxes as a write down. And the accountant said, well, if you're going to do that, you have to destroy them. So they destroyed them. Looks like a big pile of leases getting run over by a bulldozer. It's very sad.
But
it tells the whole story of it and how it came about. And if you're interested in kind of Apple history, we'll put a link into that in the show notes. It's just a great little documentary. But one of my big takeaways was Bill Atkinson is in it. Mm-hmm. And it's just so crazy because they had never, that was the first computer where they had a proportional font. You know, this is kind of the precursor to the Mac. And so Bill Atkinson was working at it from home and he got the proportional fonts working and he would take pictures of his screen with a Polaroid camera. And then he would bring the Polaroids to Apple to show them what he had accomplished.
Incredible.
You know, and he had the notebook with all the Polaroids in it from the day. You know, it's just like such a different world, you know?
It really is. I mean, I could talk about the Lisa forever. We don't have time for that today. But it is a very important machine. And generally, historic importance is a factor in these prices.
The
rarity is also a factor. And rarity and historical importance don't equal the same thing. Sometimes they do, but very often they don't. Very often something's rare because it didn't sell very well. There's just not many out there in the world.
It wasn't very good. Yeah.
It wasn't very good, or they weren't for sale very long. And so that's a factor as well. And then some people just think they're sitting on gold because they think they're sitting on gold and they want to charge a whole lot. So be mindful of that. Don't take prices face value on eBay, please.
Any common pitfalls people should be aware of when they are searching for a classic Mac they want to buy?
I think we touched on a couple of them. You mentioned the biggest one of batteries. And so this is not just laptop batteries that can swell. I actually found one of those when doing my inventory. I've got one of my PowerBooks. The battery was swollen, so I took it out. I need to dispose of that properly. It's sitting on the workbench on the other side of my desk, on the other side of my office right now for me to deal with. So you have that. You have the notebook batteries that can swell. But computers, old computers, also have internal batteries. Some of them are like the sort of AirTag style batteries, like a watch style battery. But others kind of look like a AA battery cut in half. There's different sizes and capacities. But those batteries very often will swell and leak over time. And having a computer repaired that has a battery failure can be very expensive. There are people on the internet who can do it, who can recap a board or retrace a board or things like that. But the best bet is if you have something, look at the pictures, make sure that there's nothing that looks like liquid or dust or you know, not dust, but like powder, things like that on the board. And then when you get it in, if it's not going to be in regular use, open it and take those batteries out or replace them with a new one. And I need to be better at that. I don't think I have anything right now that has failed that way, but I know I've got machines that I haven't opened to take care of that. And so that's a sort of a project that was born from doing the inventory of like, okay, I need to make sure I'm in the clear there, because you don't want to kill something because the battery inside of it, that's, you know, $10 to replace in just a couple of minutes. That fails. That's a real bummer.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Anything else people should look for?
I think the other big thing is just being responsible with data. You know, if someone sends you a machine that you buy, or you pick it up on Facebook Marketplace or whatever, most people don't know how to take their files off a computer, or that if it's something they were cleaning out of their parents' house and their parents have passed away, they don't know what's on it, right? And so part of my sort of intake is, you know, I'll clean the machine, you know, if it's dusty or dirty or whatever, And then if it works, I will do everything I can to either just format the drive and deal with it later, or reinstall the operating system if that's easy enough to do. And on later stuff, like Jobs 2.0 era stuff, right? You get like a Panther CD, stick it in there, reinstall Panther in an hour, and you're good to go. Because I don't want people's data floating around my office. And that's just more of a respect for the previous owner kind of thing. Don't go digging through other people's data. Just seems like a good rule to me. You could see all sorts of stuff you don't want to see.
Other than the Lisa, what else is on your wish list? What are the ones you're jonesing for?
Let me tell you, I keep a list in things. It's the only thing I keep in things currently. Lisa is on there, obviously. I would love a Macintosh 2FX, which is kind of like the baller version of the Mac 2.
Yeah.
I have a 2CI, which is really cool. 20-inch iMac G4 I mentioned. One thing I'd love to have is each color of the 12-inch MacBook. So I have a silver one, but it also came in gold and space gray. And maybe rose gold, or maybe that was a MacBook Air, I forget. But that sort of thing, like having the different finishes, is always fun.
People loved that 12-inch, man.
I know.
People went crazy for that computer.
I pulled it out during inventory. I was like, God, this is so cool. And then, there's some iPods and stuff that I would be interested in. Like, there's like Harry Potter iPod and other specialty versions of it. But
I didn't know they made that. That's
funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's all sorts of sort of customized iPods out there that Apple or other people did. Yeah, I mean, there's some other Macs on this list. Like, I love a PowerBook 100, like an early. I don't have a 100. I've got some others from that first generation. But yeah, the lease is the top of the list for sure. And then, down from there. But it's a shorter list than it used to be, I can tell you that.
I bet. What is your precious? What's the one of the ones that you own right now? What is the one?
Nostalgia-wise, it's not because it's rare or even all that special necessarily, but it's the titanium PowerBook. I've told the story before. It's the first Mac I got to use as my own. It belonged to my high school job, but the owner of that company basically just handed it to me, like let me take it to school in high school and college, which is ridiculous in hindsight that he did it. He should not have done that. And I have one of that model that I put an SSD in, and like it's kind of my go-to. Like if I need an old version of Mac OS X for a screenshot, it's my go-to. But in terms of like general collecting, I mean, the 20th anniversary Mac is probably the one because it's so iconic and it's everything wrong with Apple at the time. And it just really is. Like
that's the one where they sent a guy to your house to set it up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. it's a whole situation. I've written about it a couple times over the years and I edited a video on it. The video is very old and not very good, so forgive me for that. But It was sort of the capstone of a weird time at Apple, and it was killed very quickly by you know who. So, and it just it's bonkers. Like it's weird looking and has this big external sub. It's a lot of fun. So that one, I think, when people walk in and they know what they're looking at, that's the one people sort of notice. Like, oh, you have a TAM. It's like, yeah, I do.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad that you do it, Steven. I think that you should continue to do it. I can't wait to see what this list looks like in another 5 years or 10 years. I feel like it's not going to be doubled. I don't think you're going to get to 500.
No.
But I feel like you're going to fill in a lot of those holes. Like I feel like you are inevitably going to find a Lisa and like the ones. And it's going to be a really impressive collection. You know, it's going to really tell the whole story. I'd heard the story of Steve Jobs when he came back that they had a room with all those computers in it at Apple, and he sent it all off to Stanford.
Yeah.
Maybe the Hackett house is going to be the new like repository of the Mac lineage.
Maybe. I know Apple now is more open to its history than it was then. Like there was a TechCrunch article when Apple said, oh, hey, the Mac Pro is not dead. You know, remember that? Like the Mac Pro roundtable?
Yeah.
Matt Panzerino, our friend, wrote that, and this was in April of 2017, and he mentioned in this article, because I texted him about it, I was like, you gotta tell me all about this, and of course he didn't, but Apple's like hardware lab for building Macs that the lobby had like a Performa and a 20th anniversary Mac and like some other stuff in the lobby. So like, Apple is more playful with its history. Like you can see like old compact Macs in the background of some of their videos and stuff. But on the whole, Apple wants to look forward and they're fine with the community looking backward for them.
All right. Well, there we go. We finally got the story out of Steven of his Mac collection and hopefully some tips. I know we've got some collectors in the audience. Let us know in the forums what you're collecting and what's on your list and what you're looking for. You can do that over at the forums at talk.macpowerusers.com. Love to hear from you. We are the Mac Power Users. You can find us at relay.fm/MPU. If you want to get that extended ad-free version of our show, you can find it at relay.fm/MPU. That's the More Power Users. Thank you to our sponsors today, Squarespace, Sanebox, and AdBlock Pro, and we'll see you next time.